This week's Race Pace edition, oh, I'm so excited, of the Swim Brief is brought to you by Chris DeSantis Coaching. I've spent the last 8 years thinking about how to apply the science, positive psychology, to the real lives of coaches, swimmers, and parents ever since I became the first athletic coach in the U.S. to get an advanced degree in the field. If you want to know more about how you can help your team, go to chrisdcoach.com. That's C-H-R-I-S-D as in downtown, coach.com. And write me a note via the contact form. On the brief this week, it's the man I call whenever I just want to talk coaching on a podcast, Nico Messer. Nico and I talked about longer interval training a few weeks back, and if you want to listen, go through my archive and you can find that. Today, we tackle shorter intervals and all the stuff associated with it, whether it's speed work or even USRPT. We also discuss Nico's Thanksgiving plans, talking politics with your right-wing uncle, Jay Chambers, and how recreational swimmers in Switzerland react to a few seconds delay. Enjoy. And joining us late at night, it's like 9:30 at night, so if he sounds like a little tired, you know, he's a swim coach. He may have been up early this morning, but he's still up in the late nighttime. Nico Messer, all the way from Switzerland. How are you, Nico?
Chris, I'm doing well. It's not that bad yet, you know, it's like 9:30. It's still kind of early for a swim coach in Europe. Because you don't get the kids at 3 in the afternoon after school. They make it to the pool at 5 or 6.
Okay.
And then if you go for 2 hours, so it's like your practice ends. Actually, here practice usually ends at 8:30.
Oh my gosh.
So it's like then you have to make sure all the equipment gets put away and like the pool looks okay, because they're not going to let you in the next day if it doesn't. So I actually never get home before 10 usually.
So today is an early day.
So today is like an early day, and it's kind of like because we have nationals coming up this week, so it's kind of taper time, right? We try to make everything a little bit more efficient.
Do you have to take the lane lines out when you finish practice?
Actually, don't, because there's still some other groups that are swimming after us, but we have to move them around. It's kind of stupid, you know. There's like an elderly people water aerobics class that's running every day in front of our workouts, and they have two lanes, and they always want to take the two lanes where two lane ropes are in, because they just say it's the better side of the pool, but it doesn't really make any difference. They just want to have us take the lanes out and put them back in, and just so they can really push their like 45 minutes time that they have, and we lose some of our time, and they can be like laughing at us and stuff like that. So it's just kind of crazy stuff, you know, the regular stuff that goes on when you're working in like a public pool.
That was the one thing I was totally unprepared for going to coach in Denmark, was you will have to put in the lane lines at the start of every practice and take them back out. I was like, what is this madness? What is this madness? We just leave the lane lines in the water, guys. What is this?
And they have like the plan, you know, outside of the pool. It's like the plan. So it says like, oh, your team swims like Tulsa. 7:15, and then the lane is open for public, and like at 7:15 you can bet there are like three people in their back, like, are you done already? It's like 7:15. It's like, it's my lane now. Get out.
Yeah, and some guy's throwing his hands up in the air. He's disgusted. It's 7:15, like, and I mean, in Switzerland, right, too, where the train, you know, like, there's probably people ready to commit murder if the trains are 10 seconds late. I can imagine you know, when you've gone 10 seconds over your time in the lanes, there are some very angry public swimmers.
It's like, I paid $5 here. Get out of my lane.
Yeah.
I'm like, we don't pay $5 to actually rent out the pool space. We pay a lot more. I was just doing a 25 to finish off. I think you're going to be fine.
Right. So we're gonna do a podcast today. We're not gonna really do like a race pace podcast. We're gonna talk about some shorter distance training. Like we did a podcast, we talked about some longer distance training. You know, today we're gonna talk about some shorter repetitions. I want to also just give a shout out people. I wrote a blog today. It's about coaching. It's about what just happened at Rutgers. The Swim Slam headline said terminated their coach. The NewJersey.com said, you know, like mutual, I hate all this language around this stuff. It seems like somebody got fired, but, we have to like make all this language around it. There were some accusations from swimmers on the team about what was going on. And I had a little bit to write about that. And we were talking about that a little bit off camera. So before we get into race pace, you know, go check that one out. Nico hasn't read it yet, so he can't even react.
I will read it tomorrow. I read all the other ones. I was catching up. You've been on fire lately. I mean,
you've been coaching too hard. Stuff. You're coaching too hard.
Every time I read your blogs, I'm like, I feel guilty, or I'm like, oh man, why I just did that? Did he just read my mind and just like come up with something just to make me feel bad when I get home from the pool? I was like, it's spot on.
now you're making me feel bad because I have gotten that feedback that I do induce a little bit too much guilt. I've tried to put a little bit more of myself into the blog, like sort of, you know, like I think I used to definitely write too much. Like, man, can you believe dumb coaches do this? And then, you know, like I wouldn't admit the fact that I was maybe at one time some form of that dumb coach. But I try to admit that a little bit more. And even as I talk about what's going on at Rutgers and what I've experienced at other schools, like I try to reconcile, like what role did I play in that, you know, and where could I have done better? Because that's the only way, you know, that kind of self-reflection. And anybody listens to my last podcast, that ability to get some feedback and make adjustments. It's important for coaches, and it's important for swimmers. It's important for people who are, doing plumbing in my basement right now in order to get me heat.
No, it's not like guilt, but it's, you know, it's like you get out and it really makes you think about it. And then you're like, you kind of like, you want to make yourself feel good. And like, yeah, I don't do that. And then you think about it. I'm like, man, I just did that yesterday. And you may, you know, maybe not as bad as you describe it, but you're like, oh man, I just need to do better. Find a way to be better.
Well, I hope you do feel inspired to do better. Speaking of doing better, as we launch into this conversation of some short repetition training, and I know we're not going to be able to avoid talking about USRPT, but I do not want this to be a Chris Ritter podcast, so we're going to try not to tread all over the many podcasts he has made interviewing coaches about how they've implemented that type of training. But I always end up referencing on this podcast the Swim Coaches Idea Exchange group on the Facebook. I just almost called it the Facebook, like a really old person. on the Facebook. And none other than, I guess I didn't notice when he became an admin, but WorkWorks proponent Mike Murray was on there today advocating a set of 50-25s. My jaw hit the floor. Nico, are you next? Are you the next man to join the 25 repeat bandwagon?
Come on. I'm doing 125, so it's like 50. Oh. What's that? You know, it's like, oh, come on. That's for beginners. But
all right, if you're doing 100, I'm doing 225.
The thing is, for our listeners, you know, if you want to find out what Mike does, it's real interesting. He's putting stuff on in ProSwim workouts, and I mean, he's put up 6 500s like a test set. So
that's what I mean. I think,
he's got it everything, you know. If he does 25s, I bet he has a pretty good reason for it, you know. He's a really smart guy, a really good coach. I really like following what they're doing out there. Him and Mark. I gotta, after this, I gotta get on a Facebook and see what's it all about. Because if he's doing it, I probably want to do it too. So, well, I gotta steal it.
he gave a very good explanation for it too, which I think, you know, I probably came off like a smart ass, like I usually do in my comment on it. But he gave a good explanation for it, and I was sort of like, this is great, because, you know, normally when somebody posts a workout, like the first question that any smart ass like me asks is like, so what were you thinking about while doing this? You know, and he had like a 7-point explanation of like, here, like I heard about this, and here's what I thought about it, and then like here's how I'm going to implement it. And so I hope our conversation can live up to that kind of standard as we start to talk about this stuff. Now, I am definitely a proponent of shorter interval training. In fact, I'm coaching a high school team right now, and probably much to the chagrin of people in my local area, we're doing a ton of 25s. We are doing a lot of, in fact, I have some swimmers who, they're not even like, take this works crowd. I have some swimmers that, you know, it's just, don't even think it's that productive for them to do 25s. They're just pushing off the wall and doing 12 and a half, 15 meters, stopping and standing on the bottom of the pool. That's what I'm doing. I really, really like this stuff.
Also, you're a sprint program.
Well,
just kidding.
It is fair to say that in high school swimming, I mean, you only have basically, in the United States, you may or may not know this, but you only have one non-sprinting event in the whole program. Yeah. There's three sprint relays, there's a bunch of hundreds, and the 200 free and the 200 IM, okay, which are basically sprint events.
We can argue for that. I mean, people would say even yards like the 500 would be like a sprint event. So I'm all in.
Only snobby European insane people would make that kind of argument. The 500 sprint event. It's longer than the 400.
Only a little bit.
I guess a lot of turns though. Less swimming. Maybe even than a 400 free. So. When we talk about short, you know, sprint type training, Nico, like what I think when we started talking about the long stuff, like one of the things I asked you was like, what are some of the best arguments you hear for people advocating on behalf of this training? And I referenced Mike Murray, you know, making a surprising advocacy for 50 times 25, but what are some of the best arguments you hear out there for this kind of stuff?
Oh man, you know, it's hard. I'm gonna tell what I'm thinking and maybe what I hear, but it's hard for me to remember what I hear. I guess the thing that you hear most, and that goes a little bit with the USRPT crowd as well, is like, well, you want to swim fast, you got to train fast. Like that seems to me like the most resounding thing. It's like if you want to swim fast, you got to train fast. But then, some of the things, I think as much as you can learn to swim really slow and focus on your technique and make it really good and get something out of it, I think the same is true for fast swimming. When I look at it, I mean, today, so it was our first workout of the week. I hate Mondays here because we can't swim in the morning. They have to go to the gym, which we didn't do this week because they're tapering. And they asked, like, they have a strength coach that does their gym training. And I don't know the guy. I only got here. I just trust what they've been doing has been working good enough. So, but they asked me, well, do we have to go this morning? I'm like, I'd rather have you not go. Can you just tell the guy that I'm the one to blame that you're not coming this morning and stuff like that. So they didn't look that good this afternoon at the pool. But we did like a 25 build and then we did two 12 and a halves. That's like a blast. So it's like they didn't look good. I told them it's 12 and a half. I don't want to need to see good technique. I just wanted to move really fast and put a lot of power in the water. And they overdid it a little bit. So I really liked that because it looked really, really good. You know, it was explosive. It was fast. There was no breaking strokes. There was a lot of splashing, which some people may say, well, I don't like the splashing. I just thought it was great. But then we did some easy hundreds in between, and then I put the fins and paddles on them, and we're going 225, and I had them build the first one so they get used to applying the power to the fins and the paddles. I'm like, all right, now, so we're going to go at 25 fast, and fast maybe today means something really fast for someone and something not that quite that fast for someone else. I expect them to be up in the water, moving really graceful, really fast. And I'm like, the first one pushed off. And I'm like, well, that just didn't do it for me that much. So I saw her swim, I'm like, maybe she's just not feeling so good. And like the second one pushed off, and it was kind of like the same. And like the third one, I'm like, what's going on here? Like, they look like they don't have fins and paddles on. They're just going slow. And I think it's something like, you know, I look for it. As much as I may look for it in slower swimming and long repeats, I look for it in fast swimming. I want to get something out of it. It could be just I want them to be moving really fast, maybe as fast as they would be in a meet. Maybe I want them to swim really, really good technique. And some of them, they only do it when they go fast, so you have to get them going. And if you tell them, well, let's go a 500 fast, they're not going to give you a 500 fast. Because they don't think that's cool. If you tell them, hey, we do a 25, just one of them, really fast, like, easy, coach, I can do that. Watch me. I'm good at this. So
here's a joke I always used to make with my swimmers, which, by the way, swimmers don't love my sense of humor. It's, you know, it's not as funny when you're a swimmer, but I used to always say, like, oh, hey, we're going to do some hundreds at 200 pace. Sorry, no, we're going to do some 200s at 100 pace. You know, like, it was my imitation of, like, the completely unrealistic swim coach who is just going to say, like, look, like, because I can remember growing up and, you know, like, my coach explaining to me, yeah, we're going to swim some 225s, you know, like, fast so that. Hold on a second.
Yeah. Make sure that plumbing gets done right.
Kevin, yeah.
How are you? I've got plumber.
How long is that gonna take? Okay, sounds good. I'm just talking on the phone here. Yeah. Can edit this part out.
Yeah. Maybe we can ask him what he thinks about fast swimming.
Right. No problem. Where was my train of thought? Yeah. So the 200s on, or the 200s on 100 pace. But that is all to say, some of the best arguments that I have heard for this type of training is, first of all, what you referenced, that training at, you know, the pace that you're going to race at is really going to be the most effective. That rings true to me, you know, that if you would like to be fast in a 100 free, you want to amass a good amount of training at the speed that you want to swim that 100 free. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me to have a big part of your training be at speeds that are significantly slower than the one that you want to go. That seems like common sense to me. I think that I know that when I was coaching in Denmark, the last like half year I was there, I went very strict. I tried to actually like follow USRPT rules to a T. I learned a lot from doing that. I learned a lot of good things, and I learned a lot of things that don't exactly work. I think that, you know, and far be it from for me to be the only one who's sort of picking USRPT apart. I think that you know, it definitely had an initial surge in popularity. I'm really glad that the knowledge is out there, because there's a lot of stuff in swimming that just doesn't have any evidence behind it that we're doing. So to have something that has some backing in it. That said, a really wise swim coach said to me once, in reference to race-based training and also some of these Eastern European derived systems of parametric training, that the stuff is nuclear. He said it's nuclear, and he meant that in both a positive and a negative way. You know, it's very effective for getting people in shape. But the other point that he was making is, and I experienced this when I was trying to get kids to do USRPT, it's almost impossible to get people to actually do it right. Yeah. it's, you know, and even if you can kind of get some people to do it right, getting them to do that over an extended period of time is extremely challenging. And the thing that I find probably the most problematic about it is some of the mental part of it. Like you that initial common sense statement that I make, where you go, you know, you want to train as much as you can at the pace of, you know, where the how fast you're trying to swim the race. Okay, but set aside the physical demands of that, but think about, like, mentally, how much pressure that is on every stroke you swim in practice in comparison to what some people might be doing. It is very, very, that's why it's very, very hard to get people to do it right. And I'm not even sure somebody for long periods of time can even just continue to do that day after day without sort of like mentally wearing out, you know, and without the variation, like some variation, some creativity, some like release valves to just be like, today I don't have to, you know, face like an unending stream of 25s, 50s, 75s, and 100s at my goal pace, you know? Like, what do you do with swimmers that, you know, show up day after day and they're not moving forward? How do you deal with all those situations? So there's a lot of complexity beyond sort of the simple reasoning behind doing some of this stuff.
Yeah, a lot of good points, you know? So just so it's out there, I'm probably one of the coaches. I don't know what I'm doing, you know, in a bigger sense. I mean, I didn't study physiology or any physical education thing. I'm a computer science guy, so I know how to get to the bottom of problems and iterate on stuff and try to figure out a solution, which may be a good base for a swimming coach. I just figure, because you work with people a lot and that's basically what you do with people. But I do a lot of stuff, and I put a lot of thought into it, but there's no way to prove what I'm doing works, or someone else does the same thing and they do it for a specific reason. I have my reasons why I'm doing it, or why I think I'm doing it. It could just be anything, you know, and it could just be that I have been really, really lucky these past years that I actually had good athletes, so it didn't matter what I did, because they were just hard workers and they would do well no matter what you throw at them. And then if you could be like good like the interpersonal skills with them, they would just drive because they like to work for you. I think that is totally true. You know, I don't want to say I'm a bad coach. I don't think that at all. But I'm trying to. I think a lot of the stuff I do, I can improve so much by learning from stuff like USRPT, because it's all science-based. And I understand the arguments, you know, that they say, like, science is never wrong. People are. Mm. last year. I still have the video somewhere, and I'm going to start to get hate mails from people for this. It's almost been a year and haven't put them out, but I just kind of, it's like 4 hours of video with Michael Andrews' dad talking about USRPT, how they do it with Michael. Sometime soon that I'm going to try to put them out, but I just want to kind of be careful about it because I have really good conversations with him. I respect him a lot. Really a lot. I respect what they do.
He's one of my list of coaches that make other coaches crazy because, you know, I think a lot of people, it drives them crazy that Michael Andrew is coached by his dad. And they just have an image that like dad coach equals bad.
Yeah. You know? And you know, I last year when we got to be together for a couple of days so I asked him a couple of questions. I was trying to do some type of USRPT with some of the Army guys when I was working with the national team. And he was telling me, well, you know, Nico, here's what we do. If you want to do it, you got to do it all the way or you're not going to get results. If you do it mixed, you're going to get mixed results. And I'm looking back and I'm like, well, you know, we did get mixed results, but I'm not sure if it was because maybe the guy just didn't have a good day that day and he just didn't perform because he may haven't slept his 8 hours and he just wasn't up to the task of competing that day. Or if it was because we didn't do like the pure USRPT that you're supposed to follow the protocol to really get the results. And then at the end, he really improved. And especially with one guy, he improved a lot in going faster, which he never really could. So I'm like, well, maybe we still got results. We just did it different, you know? And the thing that I noticed is they're really strict USRPT. If you don't do it, they're not going to like what you do. But in the same way, they also, they still advocate Dr. Oshel's idea and base principles behind it, but they also telling everyone, and they start to tell it more often in public, that they're kind of starting to adapt what they're doing. And it could be that exactly what you mentioned, because Michael told me that when I was talking with him and his dad at the same time, it's like he said, you know, there's days I would just keep failing and failing and failing over and again. And I would have to try to go 16 repeats of something. I could only go 2 or 3 and then I would fail. And the way it is he has to stop and get out. It's like you fail, you're done because your body says you're not ready to do it, so you don't do it. And it's like he himself felt like, well, I need to train if I want to be good. You know, it's kind of like the thing that I guess a lot of swimmers have because they're used to train a lot. And if you tell them, well, stay at home this afternoon, get some rest. Like, well, coach, but I'm not going to be swimming fast. If I stay at home, I got to come to practice. Please don't send me home. Let me come to practice. I'll do anything.
Yeah. So I think you're hitting on a really good point. And like, even I fight this, like I train race pace by myself, which I don't really recommend, although I coach a lot of people through it as well. And it's a matter of fact for the way that, you know, the circumstances. First off, I'm too much of a pain in the butt to be on anybody's team, as we've already established on this podcast. I would drive any master swim coach absolutely insane if it was actually on their team. Because I would be changing all the sets, and I'd be like, oh, this set's no good, I should do this instead, and other people in the water would be mad at me. So I just stay by myself. And so I do take my own medicine in this regard. But even I, like, when it comes time for me to, you know, in that almost that exact situation that you described where I just come in, and like I'm not feeling it. Like I'm not able to do what I'm supposed to do. That's a real struggle point for me mentally, and just with that sort of back in my mind, a swimmer, like, I'm only going to get in the water 3 or 4 times a week, and now I've shown up and I'm shit from the beginning of this practice. Like, what the heck do I do? But I want to go back to actually, because I think you made a really important point at the beginning of what you were saying, and I'm gonna cheer you up for, you know, because you're a little down on yourself, Nico. I'm not gonna take credit for this. I read it somewhere in some article online. I'm gonna try to find it. You know, it's so hard to keep track of what you read, like, you know, that somebody yeah. linked to somewhere. But I heard a really good argument, or read a really good argument about the way that science and coaching intersect. And I think it's really instructive. And the point that the article was making is that, you know, when you talk about research for something, okay, a lot of what we think about is of science is quantitative research, right? Crunching yeah. the numbers. Like, let's find out what we can measure. Let's crunch the numbers. You know, let's run it through our statistical formulas. And let's see if we, you know, notice a correlation. And we're going to try to, you know, extrapolate from that and blah, blah, blah. Okay, that is valuable. But when you're a coach, you're conducting a different kind of research. If you're doing your job right every day, you're doing qualitative research. You are trying stuff and you are evaluating. Did that work? Did that not work? Was that good? Was that not good? And you're doing this all the time, every day. And that's actually a really important thing that coaches do. You know, as long as you as a coach, I think, have some reflection on that stuff and, then, you know, you can take stuff that is quantitative, and I think that there's some decent quantitative arguments to be made for this kind of training. You take some of that stuff and you try to really understand what's going on and how you can use it. And I've been thinking about this a lot too, because if we go all the way back to my man Mike Murray, I got myself in a Facebook flame war because he posted a picture of another coach who had come to talk. Jay Chambers actually has been a guest on this podcast, who came to talk at his place, and Jay was talking on several positive psychology topics, and you know, I got a little testy about that because. You know, even positive psychology, people think like, oh, it's harmless, right? It's positive psychology. Like, just sprinkle a little bit of it on your muffin yeah. in the morning and you'll feel better. But anything that is powerful can go bad. And I tried to make that point, and I don't think I made it very artfully, and I ended up pissing a lot of people off. So that's why, Nico, you had so many blogs to catch up on, because I needed to write yeah. three more blogs to explain what I was thinking. But I think I get back to this point of, you know, we're coaches, we're doing qualitative research, and we're using this quantitative stuff to inform what we're doing. Yeah. And that's sort of the best we can do.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of like when I read that one, when I did that catch up, I read the one where you were saying, well, coaches are afraid of new stuff, like of learning new stuff. I was like, I definitely feel that way. You know, it's like, I'm not afraid of trying stuff. Because I actually think if I try something and we fail really bad with it, at least I know, well, we can just get rid of it right away. Or maybe it just leads to something else. And usually that's what it is, because I'm going to take something that I saw somewhere. I'm expecting it to work the exact same way I read about it or heard about it. And then I'm working a whole team in a 4-hour lane space in one lane.
Yeah.
So it's like anything you take, it doesn't matter from where you take it, it's not going to work. Because no one works in one lane, at least 10 people, a group, probably more, with intersecting groups for at least 15 minutes at beginning or end of each practice hour. So it doesn't matter what I take right now working here, it won't work. So it's just, you just kind of go with it, see how it goes, and then you either scratch it because it's not going to work at all, or you just try to figure out how you can actually make it work and make it better.
I have a coach I need to introduce you to based off of your description of what you're working with right now. This is a tease for people who are listening to the podcast. I'm not going to say his name because I don't know if he would want me to say his name on this podcast. But after we stop recording, I'm gonna tell Nico to reach out to this guy because I think he's dealing with he's been coaching that way on purpose. God bless him for several years, and I think he could really help you figure out what to do in that situation. But that's kind of the only way, right? You need somebody to like get in there and do the qualitative research. Like, oh man, here's my situation. Now what do I do? You know, like, and then there's a lot of this quantitative stuff like assumes a bunch of conditions, right? You know, like that you have for training, you have so much time or, you know, have so much lane space or whatever, you know, like, and the reality is that many of us are not, you know, dealing with those ideal conditions, and so we have to adapt it.
We're talking like short distance GPs. I'm like, I'm literally working a whole team out of one lane,
out of a 25 meter pool.
You know, it's kind of like 25s sound really good to me. I'm like, I'm even closer to going 12 and a halfs all the time, or like even like 10 meters. Like have them stop it somewhere in the middle of the lane, move over to the other side of the lane line, and swim back and have one of the group work from the other side so we don't hit each other in the middle and stuff like that. And it got me really thinking, you know, I think it was Searcher who told me that once when he was doing kind of some experiment thing with like shorter sprint stuff, where he was like, well, you know, it was when he was working in Singapore. He's like, I was going to this a sports science guy, and he told me, anything you do over 7 seconds, you're going to destroy the athletes. You're not going to work speed. And I'm like, you go pretty far in 7 seconds in a 25-meter pool. Mm-hmm. So it's like, I'm trying to restrict myself to 7 seconds right now for a lot of the fast stuff we do. And then I'm like, well, how fast can I really get them going if we only go 7 seconds and they either push off the wall, where they're probably going to not be swimming for 2 or 3 seconds if they're just streamlining off the wall, or maybe do some flutter kick in the beginning before they actually start transitioning and swimming. Or if they go from a dead stop out of the middle of the pool, I'm like, well, how much speed do I really get of that? So I have to tell them, well, we're going to push off, and that doesn't count. So it's kind of like you build into an 8-meter sprint, pushing off the wall, and then you still go 25s, but you really only focus on maybe 7, 8, 9 meters of that 25 that's really supposed to be slumming what you want to do. And it's like, how do you explain that to like a 13-year-old kid?
Nico, like, you've got a classic long distance repeat coach attitude. You're already not even counting the underwater. Come on, man. That's just free money. And by the way, we made it almost 40 minutes into this podcast before you said that very dirty, awful, filthy word, streamline. Okay? And I hope you're happy with yourself, okay?
I am. Extremely. No, but actually, no, I was just working with the little kids first today. I'm like, We did some kicking with the pool boy because they don't have kickboards if the schools are here in the beginning when we work with little kids. So we just kick with a pool boy, and like, so they had to kick with their head down, head between the arms, pool boy out front, you know, and then just kind of, we got into some underwater fly kicks with all the kids because we kind of wish they would go past the 5-meter flags when they push off the wall and maybe take a dolphin kick, just so we can feel better about ourselves, that they look better when you go to meet. But it's kind of like, they're not doing it. And it's like, they're underwater, you know, like you were telling, like, I don't know if they're streamlining, but some of them, they still look pretty fast and they look like they're streamlined because they're actually moving somewhere. And there are other kids, they're kind of in similar positions, but they're not moving at all. They're just kind of pushing water around. So I'm like telling them, well, you got to really stretch, like get your head under your arms and stuff like that. And they're like, they look at me. I'm like, this guy is crazy anyway. So they don't do it. So I'm trying to advocate streamlines, but I guess maybe they heard your podcast or read your blog post, like the 12-year-old kids here. Yeah. And they're like, well, this guy is insane. We don't have to streamline anyway.
You're not doing it. I happen to know that I have a lot of 12 to 13-year-old readers from northern Switzerland that are, you know, because they're really, you know, they reach out to me, obviously, and they're very critical of the streamline stuff. But they're listening, you know, and they're thinking about it, you know. When I ask for feedback at the end of whoo, and you would be really impressed by the English language skills of these kids. I mean, you know, they are Swiss, so you know, they're already like speaking five languages, and so they're very eloquent. I think we digress a little bit. So I want to let's get one last thing I want to sort of discuss in relation to this is I think that there's definitely a conversation. And I'm going to use another one of those really dirty, awful words. So, you know, if you have children in the room, you know, please cover their ears. There's a conversation to be had about technique, right? And how it fits in to all this stuff. I think that, you know, you referenced it earlier, and that was, you know, in relation to, like, you had the swimmers and they're doing some 12 and a halfs off the wall or whatever, and you're just asking them to let loose. There is a swimming quality to that you look for as a coach. Like you sometimes you just want swimmers to turn off their brains and not be so or their sort of rational brains and not be so mechanical in the way that they swim. And that's really helpful. On the other hand, there's something to be said for when somebody's acquiring a new skill, like not asking them to do it full speed right away. You know, like, hey, you just learned how to ride a bike. Now go down this hill. Right? That doesn't sound very safe. What do you think, you know, what's the role of, I'm going to use how you swim instead of that awful word technique.
Yeah. I'm really... again, out of the situation I'm in right now, I'm really torn with this. You know, I came here a little over 3 weeks ago. All of a sudden, I got to work with some really good swimmers, which I don't know why they're that good. Looking at how they have to train, and like with the little kids, you know, I'm literally coaching 9-year-olds again, and not like one day a week. I'm coaching them every day of the week, Monday through Friday, for an hour and 15 minutes, which I'm having troubles of coming up with stuff for an hour and 15 minutes for them, because I just think it's too long. And like halfway into practice, I don't want to look at them anymore because they're done. Like, they're done.
they cannot get any better. Like I've been there so many times. In fact, I think this is one thing you have to unlearn with some older swimmers. You know, like when I was in Farum Swimming Club in Denmark and I spent a year just coaching kids on starts, what I found was most of the kids could do somewhere between 8 and 12 starts where they actually made adjustments and like sort of improved and changed the way that they were jumping off the blocks. And after 12, it was like they fell off a cliff in terms of being able to change things and do better. And that was just like, that's a very specific sort of skill example. But I think it's pretty instructive in terms of any swim practice, not just a short repetition practice, but probably a more important when you're talking about short repetitions, like recognizing when swimmers have just gone off a cliff and anything you try to do beyond that point, like when the team has just sort of devolved, anything you're going to do beyond that point just isn't productive, and what you do.
It's slowly, like it goes downhill. So all you do in that second half of the practice, like you try not to make it bad for them. And like, I, I've been away from like that age group for maybe a little bit too long, you know. I always been in touch a little bit, but not like really like every day, hands on. And I'm like, I completely switched the way I work with them. Like all the important stuff that I really want to get done, like where I want them to actually swim. So I want to see them swim and not like walk out of the pool right away or right. Jump in the water and hit them with a kickboard or something like that. I put in the beginning.
Yeah.
And I try to get it done and I know they're actually going to be able to get it done. And then I'll figure something out. Like today we're going on sitting on our board, like doing the kayak drill and stuff like that. And they think that it's fun, you know? It's like, it's literally fun for them because it's kind of like games.
Yeah,
it has nothing to do with swimming, and I don't really care. It has
something to do with swimming.
It takes a big amount of time, you know, like a 9-year-old sitting on his kickboard trying to scull to the other end of the pool, in a 25-meter short course pool. It takes a lot of time. So it's like you go 4:25 or something like that, like they're having a ton of fun, and they don't notice the time go by, and you're like, all right, so we only got 4 minutes to go, so maybe let's get out and do two stretches. Just they're all loose, you know. It's like they're 9-year-olds. They can all like bend their arms and get their feet behind their head and stuff like that. I don't really need to stretch them any more than that. I just need to make sure they know to move the right way and stuff like that. So we'll just do some stretching so like we don't just finish ahead of time all the time, because they're going to go home and say, oh, mom, we finished ahead of time again. And then, like, mom is going to call me. So why do I pay you for 75 minutes and you always finish, like, at 60? So,
yeah.
But I get better at it, I think. But it's, like, today, like, I'm like, oh, man. It's, like, it just didn't work. Even like, the playing games at the end didn't work. They're just swearing into it for some reason. And then the other thing, you know, it's kind of like the bigger kids. So you come here, you know the athletes. I mean, I may have seen them swim in other meets, but I come here and like my job is not to change their strokes. Maybe now that I may be going to be sticking around for a couple more weeks here, maybe I can try to do something or tell them, look, this is how I look at things, and I look at you swimming, and it doesn't fit my eye. I just there's no groove, and I look at you. I don't feel it. It's not clicking. I don't think that's the way you should swim. Maybe you should try to make it look this way. But right now that's not. And like even when they ask me what they should do. What I have been really doing is kind of like I did a lot of the fast swimming because it puts pressure on them, maybe take a few breaths less than they would if they were just swimming slowly and like breathe every two. So they actually would stay a little bit more in line if they're like doing the snake thing and stuff like that, or tell them, well, you're going to build all the way to 25 and we're not going to stop at the wall. We're going to take the turn, like make it faster and then push off and you can stream away however you want. If you want to come up and like breathe right away, be my guest. If you want to go all the way to the past the flags, do it, but you got to make it a fast turn in the wall and push off so they stop breathing in front of the wall and stuff like that, and they will do it if you ask them to go fast. But if you tell them, well, let's go with 300 and let's not breathe in and out of the wall, it's not working. It's not working. Like they do it the first turn because you just said it to them. Some of them already forgot because they swam 25 meters, but they do the first one and they're like, come off the wall. They're like, this is really hard. I don't think I can do it. So they try to do it, but they're like, oh, this is really hard. And they don't do it. So the 300 goes over and they're like, All you do is like you're mad because they didn't do it, and you think they're doing a bad job, but they're not, because for some reason there must be a reason why they cannot do it in that 300. and they can do it when they go fast for 25, and they do it coming off the wall. So,
here's what I would say about that. I think it's partially like, and you're reminding me of, I think, a way that a lot of people end up going wrong when they think about speed training in their practice. And this is where I find myself asking the question why a lot when I see other people's workouts. I feel like, that situation you bring up where you go, okay, here's what I'm asking the swimmers to do, and here's what actually happens. If you get stuck in a rut like that as a coach where you go, okay, I'm going to ask the swimmers to do something, but they are actually going to come up short of that thing that I'm asking them, you can really fall into a trap with speed training where you go, okay, I'm going to give them 4 times 100 at 200 pace. And, realistically, unless your kids don't have a lot of speed, it's going to be very hard for them to do a set like that. Right. Mm-hmm. But, coach may be thinking like, well, but I'm going to get a pretty good effort out of it. And that I will come out sharply against in this podcast. And I wrote about this. I think that you really have to insist as a coach on being honest with what you expect from the swimmers in the water, so that what it is you are telling them that you want them to do is right on a line of what it is they are actually going to do after that. Of course, you have to push the line a little bit, right? Or else you wouldn't get them to improve. But you don't want to be way out, sort of way away from what they're actually going to execute. Because then they're going to get used to not relying on what you're telling them or asking them to do. You're going to go like, oh, coach is going to give me something completely unrealistic. And then I'm going to like kind of make an effort at it. And that's where we'll meet. You do not want them to learn that behavior in the course of practice.
Yeah, no, I wasn't trying to go that way. It's just kind of, it's kind of like,
accusing I feel
like,
you.
Yeah, I know. But it's kind of like, it's more in the way, I think they understand if I tell them, hey, we're going fast. You don't want to breathe in front of the wall when you're in a meet, because it makes you really slow, because you're going to stop in front of your turn. And the way it works with the turn, if you get in really slow, you're going to get out really slow. You know, if you get in really fast, you're going to come out really fast. If you want to get speed, you're not going to get more speed than anywhere, somewhere close than you get off the wall. So if you want to beat the guy next to you, beat him at the wall, because it's really easy to do it right, and you don't have to do really a lot to do it right, but you gotta get used to do it in practice. So if I ask them to go to 300 and I get 12 sloppy turns, I'd much rather go 425s with the turn and get 4 good ones,
Of course.
Right now, 425s take a lot of time, because if I want them to do the turn right, I cannot have them take 5 seconds interval between the athletes, because we're gonna be 12 kids on a lane line. So they're gonna be hitting each other and bumping each other, and the purpose it's not gonna work. So I gotta go one athlete, swim down the middle of the lane the same way you would in a meet. Give me that good turn. Move over to the side. Swim easy to this end. The next one, go. And if you have 12 kids like that, 125 could it take as much as 15 minutes, So that's a little bit too much time, but maybe close. But it takes some time, so it's kind of like I'm doing a lot of that stuff right now, because that's the only way I can actually get something out of them where I can say, I think I'm happy with what we did. Because I could have them do 6 500s. And swim on top of each other, and say, oh, we did 6 500s. Work still works, right? They're going to be swimming fast. But I don't want to look at it. I'm just going to get really angry sitting there and
I'm going to tell Mike Murray that you said that. I'm going to tell you. So, I'm going to tell on you.
Yeah, so it's like, I'm just going to get angry, and I don't like yelling at the kids, so I'm just going to eat it up in myself, and I'm going to look really, really crappy, because if I get angry, like, you can smell it and see it, like, from 100 miles away, and, like, people are not going to like my face at the pool, and they're going to ask me, like, you're having a bad day, are your kids not doing well? I'm like, I don't want to answer those questions, because I may say something that I don't want to say if some of the moms are listening or something like that, if we have a day like that. So I'd rather just not do it. So we all have a smile and we all can say, hey, we swam really fast. We did really well. Yeah. If we're going to do this in the next meet, we're going to crush everyone.
Nico, you sound like you need Thanksgiving. we have Thanksgiving coming up here in the U.S. You need to sit down with some family members that you don't necessarily like and listen to their opinions on politics. You know, I'm sure you have a crazy right-wing uncle somewhere, as it appears that everyone in the U.S. does. Again, I've admitted to being a socialist on this podcast, so you can guess how I get along with my crazy right-wing uncle. And you need to sit down over a big, just a meal, just like endless food until you just can't you're just food is piled up to the top of your throat and you just can't even eat any more food, you know, and then just sort of fall asleep watching some American football. I think this is what you need this upcoming week. And people who are listening to this, it's actually going to come out a little bit after Thanksgiving. So we need you to have a good Thanksgiving over there in Switzerland. Get yourself a turkey. They eat turkey over there, right?
It'd be hard, but I can probably get some turkey somewhere.
I got a turkey in Denmark, so I think you know.
No, we have turkey meat. I'm just probably not gonna get the whole thing, but I can get turkey meat.
It might be a little much for you to eat.
I like some good gravy.
That's good. That's why you invite over your crazy right wing uncle. Okay. Yeah. Because you need somebody else to eat a little bit of that turkey with you.
I live with two water polo players right now, so they're pretty good eaters.
Yeah. Any last thoughts on short interval race pace?
You know, the way this has been going, I think the big point that we have been leaving out a little bit, and we can easily come back, and we will. I know we will. It's like the mental side, because I think it's the biggest thing. It doesn't matter if you do USRPG or you're just doing race-based training or short repeats and stuff like that. If you want to race fast in practice, there's like the mental part is huge. But like the overall idea of like this episode is like, I got this like quote from one of your blog posts lately, and I thought like, and it resounds really with what we've been saying here and kind of like what I've been saying about myself. And I think that's why, even if I'm saying like I'm not a good coach, I may still be a good coach, because I really put thought to the stuff I do, and I think I can sell it to the athletes and they believe in the stuff that we do. And I'm like, so you were writing down that good coaches are good coaches because they believe very strongly in what they are doing. That strong belief is essential to their swimmers also believing in what they are doing, and that belief is a huge boon to strong results. I think that really like sums it up. It at the end, it doesn't matter if you do race pace training, if you do USRPT, if you do 6 500s, or if you go 50 25s. If you're standing in front of your athletes and they think it's crap, I don't think it's gonna work. It doesn't matter what you're gonna do.
Yeah.
I think that's where a lot of coaches fail too. At least over here in Europe.
They're getting on podcasts and they're doubting the things that they do. And I know. I mean, we got to do something about those guys over there. And I have one question for you though, just based off that. Is Amsterdam still the capital of Europe? Or
Well, it's hard to say. There's not really a capital in Europe. it's kind of like
That was a bad American joke.
But we would probably, if you look swimming wise,
yeah,
it probably still is, because, you know, the Peter van der Hogenbond Swim Stadium is there. Yeah. And you know how those Dutch girls look in 100 freestyle. They all look the same. They're really on point. I mean, they used to be like sprint capital over here in Europe and at some point in the world. So it probably still is.
They exported a coach to Denmark who's doing very well right now. He's got a former swimmer of mine swimming extremely fast. And I'm very excited about those results. All right, Nico, as always, it's tremendous to talk to you. Get some sleep, okay? Be fresh tomorrow. Get ready to face those 9-year-olds and tell them what they need to know to get better in swimming, all right?
We will. I will. They will get better, you know? I'm not worried. The 9-year-olds, they're going to be better tomorrow than they were today. So I'm going to have a better day tomorrow.
All right. Bye, Nico.
Good talk to you, Chris. Bye-bye.
Thanks once again to Nico. If you want to see some of the workouts we talked about, go to proswimworkouts.com. While you're there, purchase a premium subscription for your coaching staff and use the coupon code CRDeSantis, all in caps, for 20% off. For more great swimming conversations, go to chrisdcoach.com. That's C-H-R-I-S-D, as in DeSantisCoach.com. You can also find me at Chris DeSantis Coaching on Facebook. Write me a message. Give me an email. Give me some feedback, people. I love it. See you next week.